go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. We are off and running on this, the 15th day of June, 2018. We are at the halfway mark of June. This is the Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live. That's where you go if you'd like to, oh, maybe jump into the chat room and participate in the Madcap, Merry, Wacky, Zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that the Horn chat room represents during the 3 hours in which this program is live. I'm headed there right now. And there I am. And so if you come on over, you'll be greeted by the likes of Anatole and Richard and Squeaky and VT Blom. Capably moderated, of course, by longtime and veteran indefatigable chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a spacing guild master, has elected not to fold space this evening. I'm told that both Friday on the Front Porch, both of the porches are all lit up. That means both streams are working fine, both White Rose Society and HeadOn.live. That's always a good thing. Oh, yes. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Let's see here. Yeah, it is Friday on the Front Porch, and I'm going to do my dead level best to make it through 3 hours of conversation radio this evening. I have not done that Wednesday nor Thursday. Didn't do anything Monday or Tuesday. I hate being out sick. Yuck. Some languages have a facility for having words that just sound more like what they mean. For instance, the word sick translates in German as krank. Doesn't krank just crawl all over? I mean, just doesn't it just own the sound of what it feels like to not be well? Krank. For me, yes, yes. You think about these things. Let's see. It is Friday on the Front Porch, so we'll be firing up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable in about, 56 minutes or so. And that's why I've taken it kind of easy on Wednesday and Thursday in hopes of being strong enough to get through the 3 hours this evening. I'm a long way from being over it. These attacks take some time to get over. They still carry a lot of pain with them, but it's manageable, tolerable pain. And had one of those lovely little unlooked for moments. The air conditioner in the mansion bedroom cronked out a couple of days ago. Agnes and I managed to tolerate like one night of 80 plus degrees in the bed. No more. So away we went and bought the cheapest air conditioner I've ever seen. Got, of course, made in China. Same brand that replaced the one that we put that went bad. That thing lasted 13 years, which is not terrible. That air conditioner lasted as long as the horn has been just a freestanding unit on the interweb tubes. And all the difference in the world. We can do some food porn early in the program. I can tell you that the difference between Progresso minestrone and Campbell's minestrone is night and day. Because, you just can't do the chicken broth all the time. So that rich and hearty broth that's surrounded by that surrounds the pasta and the beans and the garbanzos and whatnot is much better in the Progresso than it is in the Campbell's. Mm-hmm. Yeah, somehow I don't hear anybody salivating out there, but hey, wait, there's more. Listen. Chobani has a limited run supply of, wait for it, watermelon yogurt. Yes. Watermelon yogurt. And it is fan-freaking-tastic. I'm generally skeptical of anything flavored watermelon because I don't think it's really possible to capture it as an essence. Watermelon taffy never tasted like watermelon. Watermelon popsicle, no. Because it's just such an ephemeral flavor. But the geniuses at Chobani, by God, they got it right. And this stuff is amazing. So that's my breakfast. That was my breakfast this morning. Hey, Grandpa. What's for supper? Yeah. So program note, get it while you can. It's not going to be just in the regular mix and run of things. The Bananas Foster yogurt from Oikos, Dannon Oikos, was here and gone for about, a few months, and I felt bereft. It was a nice, smooth, creamy banana yogurt with, yes, a little thin layer of caramel on top of it, and it was just decadent as hell. That was in my last yogurt phase. Never seen it since. And it'll be the same way with the watermelon. And, I any day now I expect, kale yogurt or something like that. Oh, yes. There's some food porn. We have thanks to send out this evening to subscribers. We have 4 subscribers on the 15th day of the month. We have thanks to send out to Timothy. Thank you, Timothy, very, very kindly. Thank you very much indeed to Jim over in Seville. Lovely Seville in Spain. Thank you to Darlene in Connecticut. And thank you very kindly indeed to Robert in California, there in Clovis. Thank you. Thank you very much, all of you, for helping us keep things, keep the plates spinning on the sticks here and keep the program on the air. Program note. And for those who are here every evening, you probably get sick of hearing these things, but I hope you also understand that everybody isn't here every evening. And so when I'm not here on Monday, I know I'm going to get emails saying, "Where are you, Bob?" So Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, I have mentioned, I will not be here Monday and Tuesday or Thursday and Friday of next week. And it drives me absolutely crazy. Because it means that we're going to crawl into a really, really nasty hole. Next week has nothing to do with pleasure, and certainly nothing to do with it. No. Next week, my 94-year-old aunt will be laid to rest. Her funeral was last month, and she will be laid to rest with her husband, my uncle, at Arlington National Cemetery. and so we'll be going up for the interment. Because of that, the specialness of that ceremony and the respect due, the last remaining member of my immediate family, I'm not talking about Agnes, me, and the kids, but the family I grew up in, the last remaining member of my immediate family will be coming up from about 1,000 miles distant, and I'll spend Monday and Tuesday with them, and be back here on Wednesday, do a program Wednesday, and then take off hell-bent for leather for D.C. on Thursday, and come home on Saturday. So that's the schedule. As far as where we are nominally at $275 to finish fundraising for the week and for the middle of the month. If we factor in Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday of next week, well, let's don't even think about it. I mean, it'll be hard enough to raise the $275 tonight, let alone $1,075. But I think I should probably just write off Thursday and Friday. Those are familial obligations, and just. You know. But it's gonna make June very tough, kind of like May was tough. So that's where everything stands. If we can raise $275 this evening, it will be huge. And we will at least finish the full first half of the month of June in good stead. Okay? So I will go as far as to say, please, can we do that? The PayPal interface is over at headon.live, and it's easy to get through, not complicated at all. And if at the end of these 3 hours we've knocked down those $275, it'll be monumental, yes. But I'm not going to sit here and just go on and on and on about it, because we got stuff to talk about. And it's Friday, not Wednesday. Don't run away, Sparky. But we're going to have to talk some. We're going to have to talk some Bible. Because it was injected into the news. But before we get there, a note came in from Ron in Raleigh on a separate topic. Subject line, good riddance. I was listening to Sam Cedar's program earlier today, and they played a clip featuring Paul Ryan. The reporter asked Ryan what he thought of the controversy surrounding the ethically challenged Scott Pruitt. Ryan declared that he really didn't know anything about the ethics charges. Doesn't pay that much. I've heard the same clip. Didn't pay so much attention to it. I just really didn't know. I mean, dummied up, as the saying goes. Ron in Raleigh says, "This man is a skid mark on the underpants of government." What an image. What an image, Ron. I can't wait until November, after which we won't have to listen to any more of his bullshit. It'll actually be January, Ron, but I get your point. The fact that he'll be raking in money as a lobbyist as fast as he can at the taxpayer's expense, at least we won't have to listen to or see the zombie-eyed Granny Starver anymore. I know, devoutly to be wished. But like vampires, until they've got a stake in their heart and they're buried in garlic, you just really can't go to the bank on something like that. Well, no, I haven't. That does sound delightful. I've had the artificial kind. Albert in Rhode Island says, "Have you ever had a popsicle made from pureed watermelon?" I've not had one in several years, but they're wonderful. I got it from a Fiesta. Mexican Latin American train store in Texas. Ah, I bet it was one of those paletas. Yeah, I love those things. I get real weird about them. They're yummy. Like I said, it's Friday on the front porch. And that means that we will fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable in fairly short order. And that, if you've never participated before, this is how you do it. You get on Skype. You send a contact request for Friday on the Front Porch. This is a Friday on the Front Porch thing only. You send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, S-P-A-R-K-Y-D-U-N-C. And he accepts your request and then he'll show you the breadcrumb trail that leads to the room that holds the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. And you will take your seat there around, and we will be engaged in rousing conversation in a very short time indeed. And everybody's welcome, at least who's listening to the live program. You know, we can't do anything for the folks who don't listen live. Actually, that's not true. I can read emails. I can definitely read emails. So if you're one of the I don't listen live member of the I don't listen live crew, you can, and you've got something for Friday on the front porch, you can always share it. But that applies to the program generally through the course of the week. But that's how Friday on the front porch works. Someday, if we've ever got a new telephone hybrid, we will add we'll add four telephone lines to the Skype effect, and we've done that in the past, and it works really well. But you know, nobody's got $3,000 laying around for that right now. Jesus, we really do need a Mr. Soros or one of those folks. It would be wonderful to get back to where we started from a technical perspective. Back before the fine folks at Frontier Communications fried the living beat Jesus out of our $3,000 telephone hybrid. It would be real nice. Okay, so all that's taken care of. Well, not quite. Let's see if this needs to be... Jim wants to insert the word Trumpazoids into the language. Trump zombies who believe his shit. What an addiction to the lexicon. Thank you, Jim. Thank you. We've got, like I said, Attorney General, United States Attorney General, Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, which is his name. Inserted the New Testament into the debate over how we treat people who come from other lands for succor and asylum in ours. Asserting that people from Honduras or Guatemala or any of the other countries that we have turned into seething cesspits of blood, gore, and misery are somehow hardened criminals. Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III made a reference to the book of Romans in the New Testament. It was really pretty disgusting. And we need to, and there's a need to clarify this. And a lot of people on our side, frankly, however we define our side, in the case of tearing babies away from their mothers, I would hope that side would be defined as decent human beings and the other side be defined as indecent, not quite human beings. But however we define it, lacks in many instances a certain degree of what you might call Bible literacy. I'm looking to see if I can get a decent standalone clip. So that you can hear it right from his mush mouth. And because it might be beneficial in that regard. So far, not having just a hell of a lot of luck. Let's try again. I think this is it. Might be. Courtesy of ABC News, I think this is going to be it as soon as the stupid ad is over. Mm-hmm. Because there's context within context with this verse. We were talking about how words carry little wagons of freight. Of meaning. Oh, this is an excellent example of it.
Aggression here to discuss some concerns raised by our church friends about separation of families. I thought I'd take a little bit of digression here to discuss some concerns raised by our church friends about separation of families. Many of the criticisms raised in recent days are not fair, not logical, and some are contrary to plain law. And I would cite you to the Apostle Paul and his clear and wise command in Romans 13 to obey the laws of the government because God has ordained the government for his purposes. Orderly and lawful processes are good in themselves. Consistent, fair application of law is in itself a good and moral thing, and that protects the weak. It protects the lawful. Our policies that can result in short-term separation of families is not unusual or unjustified.
Short-term.
It's really a very short period of time.
Very
short.
I'm
not unaware, you know, that the Lord told Nehemiah that when he got to come back home to Jerusalem to build a wall. That's the first thing he told him to do. It wasn't to keep people in. It was to keep bad people out. I don't think there's a scriptural basis that justifies any idea that we must have open borders.
And you know what? God Almighty told Nehemiah to build a wall. It's one of those things about a knows-all, sees-all, tells-oh-so-little ultimate almighty power of the universe that he told Nehemiah to build a wall, and the wall didn't do any daggum good. Walls seldom do. You might recall, for instance, the line from Shakespeare's Henry V that takes place outside Harfleur. Is it Harfleur or another city? Yep. But his miners are digging underneath the walls, having a tough go of it. And they come out talking about how difficult it is. And I think it's Henry who says, "Once more unto the breach, dear friends, or stop up the hole with our English dead." Because Henry understands that walls really aren't that much protection. History and legend and myth are rife with examples of walls cities depending upon walls that really was a sort of misplaced faith. Think of Troy. They will never, speaking of the Achaeans, the Danai, the people we know as the Greeks, they will never breach the walls of vaunted Ilium, Troy. All it took was one ruse by Odysseus, one big old wooden horse with a belly full of his men, and the next thing you knew, Troy was on fire. Now, we don't know how much of the Iliad is real and how much is fabrication. The parts about the gods is, well, that's obviously fabricated. But there are real-world examples. We often cite the Chinese Wall, the Great Wall of China. They were no sooner done with that than the people outside the wall bribed the guardhouse gate guard. He handed them the keys, and the next thing you knew, they were inside the wall. But in particular, the ancient mighty walls of Constantinople had repelled invaders for 1,000 years. But along came Mehmet II at the head of a Turkish horde, believing that God was on his side and willing to buttress that belief by hiring a Hungarian cannoneer that the Byzantines couldn't afford. And he built a giant cannon that they brought up to the walls of Constantinople, hammered it a couple of times with what was at that point in world history the largest artillery piece on earth. And the next thing you know, the walls came tumbling down. Turks ran through the cities and the blood ran it ran in like a river through the streets as they slaughtered every Christian that they could get their hands on, howling, trying to get at the last Byzantine emperor, whom, for some reason or another, they never actually found, who had probably died in the initial defense of the breach. Then there's that phrase, and the walls come tumbling down. There is an old song, a spiritual, about the Old Testament story of the Battle of Jericho, in which the children of Israel miraculously took down the walls of Jericho, one of the most ancient cities in the region, by marching around it, blowing horns for a while. Maybe they were playing the Barney theme. I don't know. But the words to that include, Joshua fit the battle of Jericho, Jericho. Joshua fit the battle of Jericho, and the walls, they come tumbling down. There's all kinds of examples of walls not working. Julius Caesar at Alesia. Julius Caesar at practically any hill fort town that the Gauls had. Walls weren't worth a shit. On and on throughout history. But Julius Caesar, he wants him another one. Yeah. But that's just the wall aspect of it. It's the Romans won part of it that we want to focus on. He just says Romans, but he means Romans 1. I was dipped by the heel in Bible as a little baby Baptist. Then I knew he was talking about Romans 1. Romans 13:1. The book of Romans, which is in New Testament terms, by the way, for those not particularly versed. Romans is to New Testament scripture what Dark Side of the Moon is to rock and roll. It stands alone. There's nothing like it. And it is a monumental piece, Romans. And it's kind of hallucinatory. It's Paul's letter to the Romans, the Christians in Rome. And given the time that it was written, well, yeah, there's another example. This is so cowbell. Michael in Madison. You got the cowbell because it's a great thought, but secondly, it fulfills our obligatory Star Trek reference. Yes, Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra, Shaka, when the walls fell. How much more evidence do we need that walls are a waste of fucking time and money and a big old manifestation of to stupid? Shaka. When the walls fell. Timba. His arms wide. I don't know. Is that the next line? I can't remember, Michael. But to understand why Paul writes what he writes, we need to understand the time in which he's writing it. And this is a letter to the so-called church, which was more like a, you know, just a little local cult in Rome. And it would do us well to remember that this is this is one of the older books of the New Testament. The letters of Paul are actually older than the Gospels themselves. It was a good 40 or 50 years after the crucifixion, assuming that it existed, that it happened. It was a good 40 or 50 years after the crucifixion before any of the Gospels were committed to writing. Matthew, Mark, and Luke being the first, and then John doesn't come along until like 100 years after. And that's why John is so very much different than Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And it takes on aspects of what? Jesus fiction. A lot more magic and hocus pocus in John. Plenty in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, but more in John. Well, Paul's letters, at least the ones that he actually wrote, a lot of them that were written, and years and years and years ago, I interviewed the world-renowned textual scholar Bart Ehrman on this program, and we shared a conversation about things that were written in other people's names in the New Testament. All of Paul's letters were not written by Paul. It's so obvious as to be ridiculous. They're frauds. They're fakes. And Christian apologists tend to try to weasel their way around them, but I'm getting ahead of myself, or beside myself, really. It's so tangential. But at the time he writes the book of Romans, his letter to the Romans, Christianity is a little cult, and Paul's concern is to make sure that they don't run afoul of the Roman authorities. And there are already gossip problems with the baby church. They're Romans, cosmopolitan place. Not the Rome you imagine with the Colosseum and the... No. It's kind of a dirty, noisy backwater. But it's an imperial capital. It is under the it's under the control of Nero at the time. Marcus Drusus Nero. He will be the end of the Julio-Claudian line of emperors, because he will eventually, in time, kick his pregnant wife to death and in the process kill his own heir, making sure that there will be no more of the blood of any Caesars, anyone actually named Caesar, on the imperial throne. But the gossip had already started to run around Rome that these weirdo Christers, you know, a little-known Jewish rabble-rouser that they'd never really, nobody had ever really heard of and couldn't imagine paying any attention to, that they had secret ceremonies where they ate human flesh and drank human blood. Now, blood was not was not a deal breaker in ancient Rome. If you wanted to be washed in the blood, for instance, hey, guess where we get that phrase? If you wanted to be washed in the blood and join the Mithras cult, you would stand in a pit, and they would walk a bull onto the pit, standing on sturdy boards that had a lot of gaps in them, slash the bull's throat, and let the bull's blood run down onto the floor and drip and just cover you up, you new initiate, you, in bull's blood, making you a full-fledged member of the Mithras cult, with the saying developing that you had been washed in the blood. That would later be transferred into having been washed in the blood of the Lamb of God, because that whole blood sacrifice thing would be co-opted by the early church. But at this point in time, they were mostly just little communalists who got together and would celebrate their devotion to Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi who wore a dress every day of his life, because they all did, by having a little bit of pita and a little sip of wine, as he commanded be done there at the so-called Last Supper. Not much of a meal in my book. I prefer to think that they had a real meal beforehand, maybe some nice figs and some dates and a little skewered lamb, you know, whatever. Right. But they were getting a bad rap. And Nero was Nero. He wasn't wee, you know, crazy Nero yet. But he had the power of life and death in his little finger, and could order that every Christian be wiped out in an instant. These are not the Christian persecutions that we know of, that happened later in history, or may have happened, you know, with the lions and the, right, no. That comes later. But, this is also contemporaneous with the Great Fire of Rome. And there is some, there's a couple of scant references that the Great Fire of Rome was caused by followers of Crestus. That's the way it's spelled, Crestus. C-H-R-E-S-T-U-S, Crestus. They mean followers of Yeshua. And so, by way of trying to keep the movement alive, Paul, whose real name was Saul, but he changed his name to Paul when he took it on the lamb, because he had severely pissed off the folks back in Jerusalem, started calling himself Paul, and he evangelized, okay, throughout the Greek-speaking Mediterranean world and all the way over to Rome. And of course, there was already a group in Rome who were not under his direct sway, but he was trying to get his claws into them. And so the book of Romans chapter 13 opens with his commendation to them to not make themselves so fucking noticeable. Okay? And so Romans chapter 13 opens as follows. Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power resisteth the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. For he is the minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid. For he beareth not the sword in vain. For he is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. Wherefore you must needs be subject, not only for wrath, but also for conscience' sake. For this cause pay ye tribute also, for they are God's ministers, attending continually upon this very thing. Render therefore to all their dues, tribute to them whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. Owe no man anything but to love one another, for he that loveth another hath fulfilled the law. For this, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not bear false witness, thou shalt not covet, and if there be any other commandment, it is briefly comprehended in the saying, namely, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Now, that last little line is a direct reflection backward toward pre-Yeshua to Rabbi Hillel, who taught that the whole of the law is summed up in, what did he say? Love God, love your neighbor as yourself, the rest is commentary. These little things are tucked away in there, and they weren't there by accident. Love worketh no ill to his neighbor, therefore love is the fulfilling of the law. And that knowing the time, that now it is high time to be awake out of sleep. They were woke back then, he was saying. For now is our salvation nearer than when we believed. Because he still believed that Jesus was going to come back with his holy legions of angels and just smite the fuck out of people. And he was kind of looking forward to it. Christianity's had that going for it for about 2,000 years. Oh, he's going to come back and we're going to get some even. The night is far spent, the day is at hand. Let us therefore cast off the works of darkness, and let us put on the armor of light. Let us walk honestly, as in the day, not in rioting and drunkenness, not in chambering and wantonness, not in strife and envying, but put ye on Lord Jesus Christ, and make not provision for the flesh to fulfill the lusts thereof. That's all of Romans chapter 13. And Sessions did not say 13:1. But that's where everyone went, but he said, he cited the whole chapter. But it begins with, let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. And what he's saying there is that the Roman government was ordained of the God that they worshipped, the God of Abraham and Isaac, incidentally, Ishmael too. And that if you wanted to, if you want to live peacefully, and you should, he says, you should, you start there by obeying the law. Because he didn't want to see things happening to the church that had happened to other people who got sideways of Nero. Context is everything. John on the island of Patmos, tripping his nuts off, would go on to write the book of Revelations. And the book of Revelations is also entirely about what? Nero's Rome. There's nothing in there about airplanes or helicopters or Illuminati or Donald Trump or... No! This is a social order to behave yourself, directed strictly at the people in the church at Rome. He had an entirely set of different issues with the people in the church at Philippi, and the people in the church at Thessaloniki, and the people in the church at Corinth. Because for some reason they'd write to him and say, "Oh, we got a problem here, Paul." He's thinking to himself, "Ah, it's stuck. I'm not getting any more letters to Saul. That's good. That's good." It's not a general commentary on government. But he's saying that if it happens, God wants it to happen. Powers are ordained of God because God is the only power. And remember, Paul is mad as a hatter. Actually, he's mad as a tent maker, because that was his business. And the process whereby one turned leather into tents, tanned the leather, would make you crazy after a while. It was not nice. I mean, fumes alone. So that's the context of Romans 13. For Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III to cite that Bible passage as justification for tearing innocent, emphasis on the word, innocent little babies from their mother's arms is, at its very base level, nauseating. The problem, though, is that in American history, Romans 13 has a much different context. And it's a context that arises in the mid-19th century in the United States, when the movement toward the abolition of slavery had gathered quite a bit of momentum. It was not the first time Romans 13 had popped up. During the American Revolution, the people loyal to the crown and who insisted on continuing to kiss the airy cheek of George III, they cited it too as an argument against independence from Great Britain and an argument against freedom and an argument against, in fact, revolution. But then it went away for a little while. But as abolitionism gathered force and more people recognized the manifest evil of slavery, the slavery apologists in the South used their church pulpits to try to put some scriptural starch behind the perpetual ownership of human beings and the lives that thereby were lived in torment. The argument that Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III made, therefore, are the exact same arguments that the ancestors of Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III made in the years leading up to the treasonous assault upon the Constitution and the United States of America by the slave-owning class of the South and the people that they compelled to do their fighting for them. From Robert E. Lee to Thomas J. Stonewall Jackson was known as being a fervent Christian. And he believed this. And my own ancestor believed this. That's why the minute that I saw the quote from Sessions, I went, well, me running. This again. This is the biblical equivalent of making the states' rights nullification argument. For people who conversant with the era, it's a tell, it's a dead giveaway, it sets off alarm bells. And you know that you are listening to an unrepentant apology from an unrepentant apologist for slavery. I mean, it's not a joke when I call him Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions. That's his goddamn name. He is the third of his ilk to be named after the president of the Confederacy and the man who ordered the first shot be fired on Fort Sumter that started the Civil War, Pierre Gustave Touton Beauregard. That Jefferson's not there because of Thomas Jefferson. His formal name is Jefferson Beauregard Sessions. I throw the Davis in there just to cut down any confusion because he really was named for his father, who was named for his grandfather, and his grandfather was named for Jefferson goddamn Davis. The greatest traitor to this country that we had ever seen up until the ascension of Donald J. Trump to the White House. And yeah, my ancestor made this argument. His name was Sam Black. He was one of the great circuit riding ministers of the Methodist Episcopal Church in Virginia. He would range far and wide and stand in pulpit after pulpit, holding his Bible in his hand. And he would bellow Romans chapter 13, verse 1, fit to make the rafters shake. And he was only one of hundreds, if not thousands, of preachers in the South doing the same thing in pulpits in Charleston and Savannah, in pulpits in Nashville, in pulpits in Birmingham, in pulpits in fair Richmond and New Orleans and Jackson and Mobile and all manner of little hamlets in between. These things do not happen in a vacuum, and they have to be they have to be analyzed when they do so that we can understand why they're being said. When Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III cites Romans 13:1, it tells you that he considers asylum seekers from Central America to be no more nor less than equivalent to the slaves of his ancestors' age. That he is an unrepentant apologist for slavery. And you can't get much more un-American than that. And there's a bunch of other verses that go along with this. 1 Peter 2, Colossians 3, Ephesians 5, maybe. Those are the ones that all contain the phrase, "Slaves, obey your masters, for such is the will of God." And such is the nature of the times in which we live. That the arguments Southerners, traitors made in favor of slavery are made in the year 2018 with a straight face in regard to suffering people trying to get away from the bitter, fetid stench of death itself. I just wanted to make sure that we got that analyzed and out of the way. So that now every time you see this clip played, you go, "Oh, he's making a pro-slavery argument." And meanwhile, all the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical Christians over there in the in Trumpsylvania, Trumpistan. Will gladly sign on to this as easily as Southern so-called Christians signed on 180 years ago. Damn. Note coming in from Barbecue Todd in South Carolina. Concentration camps / theology. What do you suppose will happen when some of these detained youth are released and become very agitated with the United States? In addition, research already indicates confining mammals in small spaces produces aberrant behaviors such as sexual and physical assault. Beauregard has no business using the Bible in this instance or any instance related to government matters. Where does he get off the nerve of him? These folks have taken a leave of their senses. Well, he introduced it, remember, Todd, by saying that he was responding to some of our Christian friends who said that it is unchristian for us to be tearing children away from their parents. And he wanted them to understand that Jesus wants little children. Besides, after all, they all probably Catholics anyway. They ain't really Christians. And the evangelicals out there going, "That's right, that's right." But no, it doesn't bode well. And even if the kid doesn't act out or decide to hate the United States forevermore, how about the ones who just get raped? We've got 10-year-olds sleeping next to grown men in our concentration camps every night. How many nights do you think it takes? I mean, not talking directly, asking you directly, Todd, but it's rhetorical. Meanwhile, as Albert reminds us, Dope 45 says it's the Democrats in Congress fault that kids are being taken away from their parents. Why hasn't a reporter called him out on it? Well, you don't get to tell the president he's wrong if you're a member of the powdered and pampered panjandrums of the White House press corps. You just have to stand there and let them lie to you. Except in a few very, very limited circumstances. And it wouldn't matter anyway, Elbert, because you can't tell Trump anything. Nothing at all. It just bounces right off of them. There's actually an example of that. It happened in the press briefing room. And I admit, it was a little bit gratifying. The person in question is Brian Karam. From the correspondent for Playboy magazine. They're still out there doing journalism. And he wouldn't take no for an answer. As he pressed Sarah Sanders on the issue of separating. And, you know, it sounds so clean and so sterile to say separating children from their parents. That makes it sound like we've got a room. And now, Mommy, you go stand over in the corner, and the precious Lumpkin, you stand in the other corner. See, we've separated them from their parents. The rivers of tears that flow are not present in an antiseptic phrase like separation of children. That's why I say ripping children from their mother's arms, because that is what happens. And damnation, such as it is for a person like me, damnation upon every single member of the Border Patrol in the entire United States of America, because we have legal doctrine that says that should be the case. Because even the ones who might disagree, they're not doing anything. Their silence is their acceptance. Brian Karam from Playboy went after her. Here we go. Let's see. Just a sec. Because it is, like I said, it's a little bit refreshing.
If we make the slightest mistake, the slightest word is off, it is just an absolute tirade from a lot of people in this room. But news outlets get to go on day after day and cite unnamed sources, use stories without sources.
Oh, Crimea River, stupid.
You know, you mentioned the Scaramucci story where they had to have reporters resign.
Come on, you're inflaming everybody right here, right now with those words. This administration has done that as well. Why in the name of heavens? Any one of us, right, are replaceable, and any one of us, if we don't get it right, the audience has the opportunity to turn the channel or not read us.
I think you
have been elected to serve for 4 years at least. There's no option other than that. We're here to ask you questions.
Right.
You're here to provide the answers, and what you just did is inflammatory to people all over the country who look at it and say, see, once again, the president's right, and everybody else out here is fake media. And everybody in this room is only trying to do their job.
Well, I disagree completely. First of all, I think if anything has been inflamed, it's the dishonesty that often takes place by the news media. And I think it is outrageous for you to accuse me of inflaming a story when I was simply trying to respond to his question. Kevin.
Thank you, Sarah. I just rapid-fire.
No, actually, I was wrong. That wasn't the clip. Dang it. Let's try it one more time. He's apparently given her hell in the past, which is a good thing. Well, it's not going to load, so we're going to have to do without Brian Karam's voice. You'll have to just deal with me instead. He pressed her. He said, come on, Sarah, you're a parent. Don't you have any empathy for what these people are going through? They have less than you do. To which smoky-eyed Sarah said, Brian, gosh, settle down. Sarah, seriously. I'm trying to be serious, but I'm not going to let you yell out of turn. Because, you know, she's a fucking schoolmarm. And he continues, and hey, Brian, I know you want to get some more TV time, but that's not what this is about. And he said, it's not about that. It's about you answering the question. Answer the question! It's a serious question. These people have nothing. They come to the border with nothing. You throw children in cages. You're a parent. You're a parent of young children. Don't you have any empathy for what they go through? And she kept blowing him off and went to the next reporter, who, if the next reporter had had any sense of loyalty or decency, would have said, no, you go ahead and answer Brian's question. Mine'll wait. But, of course, that doesn't happen in the powdered and pampered White House press corps. But it was a little bit refreshing. If you can find the audio's over at pluralist.com. Playboy reporter snaps on Sarah Sanders over immigrant children policy. You're a parent. And I'm going to wrap all this up. But the fact of the matter is, she is a parent. Father's Day is this weekend. She's not a dad. She's a mom. She's actually been on the table, up in the stirrups, sweating and heaving and hoping to survive. Because remember, the infant and mother mortality rate in the United States is higher, mortality-wise, it's higher than Cuba's. And she's known that fear that every woman who has ever born a child has known. The Bible that she fucking worships says that a woman is never nearer death than when she is giving life. But they're not white like Sarah, and the babies aren't white like Sarah, so Sarah doesn't give a good old-fashioned rat's ass. Rip them away. Send them off. Give them a useful skill. Let them be a maid in Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions' son's or daughter's house. God damn her! What a disgusting lot these are. And I can proudly say that we have a start, we have a challenge on the table, courtesy of Steve from Georgistan, to get us going. Steve will double the next $25 that come in. Remember, we got $275 to knock out this evening. Thank you, Steve. Thank you very kindly. Celebrating a 22nd wedding anniversary with the lovely, charming, and talented Ms. Karen this evening. Happy anniversary, kids. So let's take a little break. We'll come back with the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. It's Friday on the Front Porch on the Horn. I'm Bob.
by themselves. You don't have to hide anymore.
Still just a great song. 1985, from the best of the Hooters, All You Zombies. That's a good one. 17 minutes past the hour on this Friday on the front porch. I'm proud to say that John jumped in on Steve from Georgia Stan's challenge, and there's $15 to go on Steve's challenge, and when that's met, we'll only have $225 to go to finish the evening. Thank you. Thank you, John. Thank you very much indeed. And let's run right over to the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, where longtime Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable moderator Sparky awaits. Hey, Sparky.
I'm here.
Yes, you are. You didn't run away. You understand the necessity of that.
Staying cool.
You're actually... are you actually in the man cave?
No.
Oh, okay. I was just checking.
No, the man cave's kind of hot, been kind of hot the last few days. We had 100 the other day.
Ooh, it's going to get warm for a little while now, isn't it?
Well, it starts warming up all the way through July, and then August is usually the worst.
Yeah, August is the infernal part.
Then it slowly cools down through September and October.
Well, let's not root for October to get here too quick, okay?
Why not?
Because that means I'll start. That's when I start freezing my ass off again.
Oh, okay. All right. I forget about you.
I cherish these warm days. I enjoy my opportunity for naked radio. Believe me.
So you had to get a new air conditioner for the bedroom.
Yeah. We run two air conditioners in this house, one in our bedroom and one here in the studio. We're at a tolerable 79 degrees in here right now, but the bedroom had become just a miserable, swampy, unpleasant, you know, where you kick the, and there's a fan blowing, but it's just blowing warm air around, and ugh.
Well, I have central air conditioning. It's set at 77 today.
Well, we used to, but it died about 10 years ago. And then the derecho finished off what was left. And you know, those things run, you know, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, $10,000, and then it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, I know. Dude, I spent $900 just to fix the toilet floors and the toilets.
Well, the fact of the matter is, with our coal-fried electricity around here, if I tried to run central electric heat in here, or central electric air, I'd have to,
bankrupt yourself, wouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said, we run two air conditioners, one small apartment fridge, a microwave, the electronics here in the studio. We charge phones. We have a toaster oven, a toaster, a coffee maker. I'm trying to just tally up the electronics around, and it ain't nothing to have a $300 a month power bill on that.
Yeah. I never have a $300 a month power bill.
It's worse?
No, it's less.
Oh, okay, yeah. And God knows in the winter when we have to go to electric space heat plus, you know, and then the propane, it goes out the window.
Damn, Bob, do you live in a mansion or what?
No, yes, it's the fabulous Kincaid Mansion at the Horn Compound. You know that. You don't want to know the heating bill for the hangar for the Gulfstream 5.
Sorry, Duncan, I didn't mean to step in. I had to interject there.
No, it's a tiny place. It's a little house that was built in 1937. It's maybe 1,100 square feet. But the thing is, we keep having to pay for the coal-fried mistakes of the well-meaning but mistake-prone executives of Appalachian Power, who absolutely do not want to build any wind farms or solar installations. They did think about buying a couple of wind farms, but the Public Service Commission told them that was not permitted to do in West Virginia because coal keeps lights on. That's not a joke. That really happened.
Oh, jeez. Well, maybe someday they'll shut down the coal.
Well, maybe someday I'll figure out a way to put solar on the roof here. I keep talking about it, but there's no way to run a GoFundMe or any kind of crowdfunding campaign just, you know, as a one-man band. It's almost impossible. Not and have it succeed.
You got a good roof?
Oh, yeah.
Trouble in my house is I got too many trees. I was going to get a...
Oh, I've got a magnificent southern exposure.
Well, I was going to get a ground-based solar thing in the back, but they didn't want to do it the way I wanted to do it, so I said, screw that.
What did you want to do that they didn't want to do, Sparky?
I wanted it hooked up to, so I could feed it to the, in the shop and feed it back to the house.
And why was that a deal breaker for them?
Oh, because at the time I had changed out the electrical service in the shop, but I've changed out everything in there. And then it just got put to the back burner.
Well, maybe revisit it. It doesn't sound like it's insurmountable now.
Well, I got to put a new roof on the house in a couple of years.
Ah.
So, that's going to be kind of costly.
Get a
2022.
Get a 10 roof, then you never have to worry about it again. It'll die before you will. Or scratch that, reverse it.
I was going to say, but yeah, yeah. That's what we did after the derecho ruined the roof here. We went with a steel roof, and I love it. I love it. And the sound of it, it's worth it if for nothing more than the sound of the rain on it. That's like a little gift.
If I redo the roof, it's going to outlive me.
And you know, you're not making the same hydrocarbon commitment that you are with asphalt shingles.
Well, that's what's on there. You used to have a pea gravel roof.
You can bang a steel roof down on top of the asphalt.
Exactly. I mean, when we got around to getting the roof done here, it wasn't even a day job. It was start at 8, done at noon.
Yep.
Yeah, but you had to have your roof all measured, pre-measured, and you had to order all the panels, right?
Well, the guy I hired to do it did that. That's why you hire them.
Yeah, but I mean, that's what makes it a day job. Is there everything is measured and made to fit?
Oh,
I'll never forget.
It's just a rectangular house. I mean, we don't have seven gables or anything like that.
Yeah.
Just a plain pitched roof and done.
I'll never forget that one job we did, bank job we did. Brand new building down in Anderson. They put a metal roof on it. And the roofers were getting shocked from the induction from the just all the electrical cables and everything underneath the roof. So I had to ground a bunch of stuff. I had to ground their scaffoldings and all kinds of things. Just so they wouldn't get shocked.
Wow.
But I don't think that'd happen here. Plus, we were right next to a high voltage power line. But just the CVA power comes right down Central Valley Power Authority, or in WAPA, Western Area Power Authority. The lines from Mount Shasta, I'm not Mount Shasta, but Shasta Dam come right through there, heading south, right next to the freeway too. Just the way that was built way back when, before the freeway was there even. So that's where they were getting the induction from, was the high power line.
Sounds a little sketchy. Or
yeah.
Or perhaps exciting.
Yeah, well, you can feel it when you're walking at high power lines. I mean, you can feel it when your hair rises on your arm and everything, just tingle.
I hope never to feel such a thing.
Well, I'll never feel it again, that's for sure.
Hey, Steve, I wanted to thank you for the challenge and tell you that the challenge has been fully met. Gary,
that's awesome, Bob.
Gary just jumped in and actually took us down to, between you and Gary and John, we're down to 2:15 to go, so that's hope-inducing. Thank you very much.
But oh, that more makes me happy.
But more particularly, happy anniversary, man. Now you said you said Miss Karen has to work tonight.
Yeah. When she gets in, I'll have to bug out. But you know, she's working at the post office, and she works very long hours. So it could be a while, or it could be any minute. I don't know.
Well, you know, you may both just be tuckered out from the length of the day. I mean, maybe do something special tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, at a minimum, I thought I would take her to a decent restaurant tonight, so, you know, we don't have to cook or any of that crap.
Well, hopefully it'll be a decent restaurant that still serves Bud Light.
Or, right now, just a Jack Daniels and water will do me fine, you know.
You've got, do you have a, because I have a rough idea of where you are, do you have a good selection of, like, local joints that aren't chains and stuff?
Yeah, in town, there's all kind of local restaurants, but they tend to come and go. Even the successful ones, I don't know why. Maybe the taxes are too high or...
No, probably, I mean, come on, it's the South, no. I'm thinking it's probably because the restaurant business is so brutally difficult. It takes a hell of a lot of, it takes a hell of a lot of discipline. You know, the old rule of thumb is that you have to be prepared to lose money for 5 years. In order to make a successful...
I guess logistics of keeping fresh food and all that. Nobody wants frozen food, so...
Well, it also depends. It depends on the locals too. I mean, over in Beckley, I look. I'm just gonna say it. I despise Beckley. it's just a horrible. I mean, Charleston was recently listed as one of the 50 worst places to live in the United States. Yay. So it's got that going for it.
Salute.
But it only made the cut because it had a population higher than 50,000. Beckley doesn't have that. If the cut had been lower population-wise, Beckley would have been right in there. Horrible, god-awful traffic. Narrow-minded, mostly backwards people. You know, it's an entire city of... Not an entire city. I mean, for God's sakes, Boss Man Wayne and and Brother Jim and several other good progressives live over there. But they'll tell you, too, you know, it's maggots wall to wall over there. And one of the things that obtains in Beckley, Steve, is that, and I've seen it more times than I can count, somebody can come in and start a restaurant and do great work. You know, good food, decent prices, great service, nice location, and the mouth-walking, knuckle-breathers of Beckley will stay away in droves. On the other hand, if you put up a brand-new, shiny McDonald's, the mouth-breathers and knuckle-walkers of Beckley will have concentric rings of cars around it waiting to get through. I just want to see if it's as good as the last one.
We have that here, but I don't understand it. There's restaurants here that you have to wait in line on a Wednesday that have went under that just can't do it, you know, and I could never figure that out. But you're right, you know, when Captain D's hit this little area, oh my God, it was like an hour and a half wait.
It's a fine seafood restaurant here in the foothills of the Appalachians in North Georgia.
We had a Steak and Shake hit here about two, three years ago. It was at least an hour wait in the drive-through line.
Did it make it?
It was ridiculous. Yeah, oh, yeah, it's still there.
Now, see, I have some regard for Steak and Shake.
It's a chain.
It's not as good
as the one that's in Atlanta, but...
That's the thing. There was one... right off at the West Paces Ferry exit off of I-75. And I'd get off work at 6 o'clock in the morning at CNN and head home to my apartment right on the banks of the Chattahoochee River. And I'd stop on the way home at Steak and Shake. And, of course, that was my dinner time because, you know, when you work the graveyard shift, everything's backwards.
And they never close, so.
And they didn't bat an eyelash when I told them I wanted a double cheeseburger and how I wanted it and a big old chocolate shake so chocolatey it'd turn me inside of my mouth out with the bitterness of it.
And 2 in the morning.
No, 6 in the morning.
6 in the morning.
Yeah. And so I loved how they took those little pucks of beef and would use those spatulas to just spread it out to this paper-thin patty, and you'd get these wonderful, crisp lace edges on the burger. That's what made it special.
Oh, they're good. But you will find, if you visit many of them, they vary quality-wise from location to location.
Well, I guess it'll be a long time, even considering the nature of Atlanta. As far as chains go, Steak and Shake was replaced in my soul a few years back by a Wisconsin outfit called Culver's. And anybody who's ever been to Culver's knows why I just, you know, wax prolific, wax poetic.
Oh, I do.
Over it. There's a couple in Kentucky now. I think there's a couple in Ohio. They may have made it into Tennessee by now. But it's the best hamburger beef I've ever eaten, and they make their own ice cream on site.
Well, if you ever come back, Bob, Ted Turner has opened a mini chain. I don't know how many he's got, but it's called Ted's. And all he uses is bison beef. Oh, my gosh. That puts any hamburger I've ever had to shame.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Now, I knew he had the chain of Ted's Montana Grill for a while.
Yep.
But is that simply
called Ted's.
Okay, this is just Ted's. No, Montana Grill.
Nope.
Well, if I ever see one, I'll duck in there, assuming that, you know, my gut ever gets back to normal again and I get off the yogurt and soup diet.
So... do I need to use my old voice and say, how you doing, Bob?
So, you got any thoughts about a restaurant? I'm living vicariously through people who can you know, eat decent food.
Well, if we don't go local, we might go to Ted's. The problem with going local is it's not consistent. You might go there one night, and it might just blow your socks off, and the next night you might think, man. Or you wake up, you know, the day after you ate there, and you're trotting to the bathroom every 10 minutes, you know?
Ooh. Yeah, see, we've got a little problem in Kentucky and West Virginia right now. It seems like there's a new news story every day about another restaurant where somebody's picked up hepatitis A. It's absolutely roaring through Kentucky and West Virginia. And
that's concerning.
It seems to be, you know, it's your chains, it's your Pizza Huts and your Wendy's and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Taco Bell.
I'll be honest, my favorite cooking is Karen's cooking, but I can't ask her to cook on our 22nd wedding anniversary.
No.
That ain't happening.
No, y'all deserve the time away from little Cletus and little Twiggy. And, you know, hopefully there won't be a thunderstorm and Cletus won't flip out.
Her cooking is the only cooking that really doesn't, I know, is not going to ever make me sick. She's an awesome cook. I got lucky. I hit jackpot.
Absolutely. And you've been collecting the dividend checks for 22 years.
No, I'm crazy about that woman, Bob. I really am. Everybody should be so lucky. But I don't want to get mushy here or anything. And let me switch gears. And, you know, you were talking about a Beauregard anymore. I don't consider him a Christian, okay? And I don't believe in any of that hocus pocus. But I do believe there was a man called Jesus Christ that walked the earth, you know, thousands of years ago.
Middle name was H, yes.
Yeah, and he was probably a cool dude. But, you know, these people don't pattern themselves after him. They're not Christians. They're Paulians.
Hey, if Jesus was here today, guys, I think he'd be celebrating Gay Pride Month, right?
He'd probably be pissed off.
Well, he probably
we're treating people.
He probably would be, and alternatively, he'd probably be in a dog cage somewhere in Texas.
Well, that's true. That's right.
You know, sitting there in the cage, going, "Dad, what the fuck? Again? I thought I took care of all this the first time."
But what is shaking down here will drive a straight man who swore never to drink again to drink. I mean, it's difficult what we're doing to people, Bob. I mean, as far as ripping little kids away from the arms of their mothers.
Now the White House has come up with a new line of argument, so to speak. Well, when we convict people of crimes in the United States, MAGA, we take them away from their children. Why should criminal illegal ISIS MS-13 brown people from Honduras not MAGA? Why should they have special privileges? Merkins MAGA, don't MAGA have MAGA?
That crazy orange-haired fucker is blaming it on the Democrats. I don't know if he caught any of that or not.
It's
Democrats' fault. How the fuck could it be their fault? He's the one that's pulling all this bullshit.
There is no statute that has any such requirement. And moreover, you know, Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the turd over there.
Is he really the turd? I mean, I knew he was.
Yeah, he is third of that name.
Okay.
He refers to them as people who break the law. It is not against the law to seek asylum in the United States.
No.
It is not against the law to cross the border in hopes of getting to be saved from the horrors from which you are fleeing.
And Mike used a good term last night. We're monsters. And this chills me to the bone. What they're telling these people is, okay, you go in this direction because you need a shower, and we're going to take your kids and get them cleaned up. Does that not sound familiar?
It's inescapable.
That ought to chill everybody to the fucking core, man.
Well, look, let's understand. If Sarah, do you think, and I'm serious about this, do you think if Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags, good, upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical Christian, do you think if she was given the chance and there'd be no punishment or anything, you think maybe she'd pick up a little brown baby and maybe throw it into an open mass grave? You think she'd do that? Because I don't. I think she'd get a pitchfork so she could get a few extra.
Wow, that's heavy, Bob. But yeah, I can't deny it. I mean, she's a monster.
I want war crimes trials for the. I want not war crimes, but I want crimes against humanity trials for these fuckers. I want Trump to stand in the dock and answer charges. And I want Sarah Huckabee Sandbags to stand there making her goddamn mascara run with the great big Christian alligator tears talking about how she loves Jesus. And they play back to her tapes of her defending, ripping babies away from their mothers. I want to see that happen. I want Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions standing in the dock and answering for his crimes. Because these are crimes. Sorry.
And it's our tax dollars. It's our fucking tax dollars that are funding this.
It's our tax dollars, Steve, but more philosophically, it's our names, okay? We can speak out, but every one of these things is being done in our name.
That's right. And it's going to get worse. At least the Walmarts are—they got some kind of certification or regulation. When they send them to tent cities, which is their next plan, these fucking monsters. And I don't mean that in a cartoonish sense. I mean monsters, as in nightmare monsters.
Yeah, the humankind.
Beings, and this karma is going to come back and bite us in the ass if we don't stand up and say, "Fuck this." We're not going to take this shit anymore, not in their name. We have to do something, Bob. We have to. And I don't know what to do. I'm an old man. I'm ain't that far from crossing over, you know, but I don't know. I don't know what to do. I'm so frustrated. I don't know. I look to people like you and Mike for answers and...
Well, I doubt
if Mike, on you guys.
I doubt
you
if know? Mike or I have any. Jim, with his knowledge of history, has taken to...
It's affecting my health. All I want to do is drink, you know.
Right, just to
numb
drown it
away.
Out. Yeah.
Numb it away, yep.
I prefer the Zen approach of weed eating and two-cycle oil exhaust. It's a nice buzz, the two-cycle oil.
That'll work, too. I up my daily walking from 1 mile to 2 miles a day, but still, I mean, once you're done with your walk, all this shit, you turn on the news, it's still hitting you right.
You got to do something that leaves you exhausted, Steve.
Well, maybe I'll start running, man. My old arthritic feet can take
Get a weed know. Eater and weed eat your neighbor's yard if you just run through your own too fast. Go weed eat a private cemetery just to be nice.
But it just gets scarier and scarier. And hell, did you hear what Trump said today about how he wants us to look up to him like the people in North Korea?
He wants us to sit at attention.
Right. And then he tried to come and follow that up with, "I was just joking." Bullshit. He wasn't joking.
He was deadly serious. I saw there was no joke in his voice. There was no giveaway that he was funning.
Are we going to take this?
And when he said, and he's their leader, and he's their strong leader, you better believe he's strong. And his people sit up, sit at attention when he speaks. And you know, I was by myself, and, you know, Agnes worries a little bit because sometimes I just spontaneously scream now. And this was one of those moments, like, because he'll kill them if they don't! Jesus,
you know,
but he wants that power too. He wants the ultimate power of life and death, Steve.
we've got to get rid of him somehow, some way, and I don't mean in a physical sense, G.I. Joe man out there. I don't mean in a violent way, but somehow he's got to go. I mean, it's going to be either him or us.
If I thought it would do any good, I would convert to some religion and engage in imprecatory prayer day after day after day. I would light candles. I would burn incense. I would ring gongs and make little sand sculptures. I would. Because apparently it's quite legal to do that, because the good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual Christians prayed for Barack Obama to die every day that he was in office. And they were proud to tell us they were doing it. So,
Eddie, do you know what fucking Washington Journal talked about this morning for 2 hours?
Oh, no.
Hillary's fucking emails.
Yeah, oh, by the way, and in the Inspector General's report, Steve, did you catch this? One of the things that they criticized Jim Comey for was that while he was investigating Hillary for using a private email server, he was doing the government's business on a fucking Gmail account. Son of a gun. Yeah, I mean, I read that and I wanted to just run outside barking like an old yeller dog, hooting like a barn owl, and eating dirt and running rabbits. But then again, I read another story about how Callista Gingrich, you know, Newt's wife, the ambassador to the Holy See of the Vatican, because she's such a good Roman Catholic, she returned a stolen letter, a stolen copy of a letter, but it was an authentic copy made contemporaneous, from 1493, from Christopher Columbus. And she returned it to the Vatican. She did. And all I could, and I know this is semi-pornographic, I apologize, but when I saw the picture of her standing there with some guy in a red beanie, I thought, huh, you know, about 21, 22 years ago, it was a different pose. She was bent over the conference room table with her skirt up and her legs spread, with Newt Gingrich's dick as far into her as he could get it, while he banged away at her, hollering about the moral turpitude of Bill Clinton, and a banging away on Callista like a cheap gong.
Why his previous wife wilted away with cancer, and he had the nerve to tell her, "I'm leaving you," you know. Jesus, man, these aren't people.
Fuck me again, Newt, and put some stank on it. Jesus, I hate these people.
Well, you know, as far as Comey's use of the of an unauthorized email to conduct business, I mean, isn't the rule it's IOKIYAR?
Yes,
you know?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, because they're Republicans.
And Rick, I wanted to ask you, because you have a legal mind. Of course, Trump come out and said, "Oh, I feel vindicated, no collusion." Does this give them grounds to get rid of Mueller in any way?
No.
Okay, well, that's the direction Fox News is trying to take us in.
There's nothing in that report about him.
No, it has nothing to do about the Russian investigation, the Russian influence in the election.
Good.
It has nothing to do at all with that. It's just simply Hillary's email. And actually, if anything, it, you know, I think it supports the claim that, you know, that basically Comey lost Hillary the election, you know, because he did not follow the established protocols. If somebody is not going to be charged with something, you don't come out and do a press play by play to get into the thought processes as to why you're not going to charge them. Because the idea is you don't want to dirty them up. You know, if somebody's not going to be charged with a crime, you just don't say anything, you know? you know, you don't hold a press conference. That's like totally ridiculous. You know, and then he had no obligation
if the IG report did anything, it just finished off what we knew all along, that that Comey basically, for all the other things that were happening, Comey finished the job.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And he's got the blood of all these little kids that are being ripped away from their families. Well, not the blood, but he's got all that on his head.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
I wouldn't want to look in the mirror if I was him.
Who knows what's going to happen to these little kids? I mean, you know, they're going to have anxiety, separation anxiety, and God knows what's going to happen to them as they're when they're older, how that this is going to affect them. You know, if this thing.
If Trump had his way, they'd be in a sweatshop and knitting hats and shirts, you know, for $2 an hour.
Or they'd be in a mass grave.
Don't give him any ideas.
No, I know. I know.
He wouldn't get rid of the labor.
Oh, I've got a cowbell for Matt in San Francisco. Stop telling us how Newt fucks, Bob.
Oh,
yeah, that's one visualization I don't want to see.
Well, and Kitty over on Twitter said, "Oh my stars and garters, Bob, dying here with that picture you just painted of the Lizard Lady Callista." Well, I actually made a choice because the other one was him lecturing her. Callista, I love you for your mind. You're one of my best aides in my congressional office. And you know as well as anybody what an immoral poltroon Bill Clinton is. And she responds, and that's our ambassador to the fucking Vatican.
There you go.
Christ, we're in a hell of a mess.
Oh!
Bob!
Hey, Charlie.
Hey, I wonder if there's any room for Mary Carey in Trump's cabinet. You know, the porn star who ran for California governor years back?
It's not whether there's room for her in the cabinet.
Yeah.
Giving myself a cowbell for that.
There you go.
Thank you.
Well, they're holding a jobs fair, you know, with the Hill.
Hey, yeah, it's not too late for everybody to apply.
Trump always says he has people lined up to go to work.
Right. Sure. Sure.
My apologies for all that prurience. I sincerely do. Yes, absolutely. But that's just a little glimpse of what it's like being to live in my mind. It's not a dirty mind. It's just a mind that constantly comes up with imagery based upon knowing, you know, who the people are who are saying these terribly, terribly upstanding, moral, virtuous, Christ-driven words. And when they're not saying those words, they're grunting. I mean, there's a book out there, and I can't remember the title of it, and I can't even remember the author. I mean, I ran across it way, 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 way back in college. Written by a woman who was from the Jungian school. And she talks about the I-not-I dichotomy. And she posits that for some people, they classify the world into I. The world is every I, and everything else is not I, and all the not I are just objects. In other words, you know, Donald Trump is I. Some people get into the orbit of I, and it transforms them a little bit, like Precious Ivanka. But everybody else is not I. There's Trump and not Trump. And if you happen to be in the class of not Trump, you only matter insofar as you can improve the life of Trump. Everyone else is furniture. And it's a helpful analysis. Let me just say real quick that we're still standing at $215 to go at with fundraising this evening, and I'm just going to ask really, really nicely. Please, let's just stay even at the middle of the month. If we could do that, it would be tremendous. And given what next week is going to be, it's almost imperative. So we got $215 to go, and thank you to John, and thank you to Gary, and thank you to Steve from Georgia Stan for knocking down the first $50 of it this evening. Thank you so very much. Let's see. We got some other folks in the room this evening. Well, let's go to Charlie real quick. Anything else, Charlie?
Bob, on in Romans 13:7, that's kind of conditional. It says to render respect where respect is due, according to one translation. And in 1 Timothy 5:8, it says that a man who does not take care of his own is worse than an infidel. So, you know, people, if you're low enough to split up a family, then you don't deserve any respect. This Romans 13, Foghorn Leghorn needs to know that that's conditional.
Well, it says
render respect where respect is due.
And it's also written specifically to the church at Rome. It's not written to everybody. It's like picking, you know, Paul is like picking up a letter to your next door neighbor and reading it and thinking that it's and just saying, well, this is a letter written to me too.
So,
yeah.
And, you know, another thing that I'm getting really tired of is this premillennial dispensationalism. The book of Revelations, if you'll read Revelation 1:1, it says these things, and 1:3, it says these things will come to pass shortly. So the book of Revelation is not a future prophecy. It's pretty much, it's telling of the fall of the Roman Empire. The beast in Revelation 13 is referencing the Roman government. It's a highly symbolic book, and people want to apply it to the Middle East today, and you can't do it.
No, you can't. It was written for a specific time and a specific place, and Nero's Rome is the Babylon. Nero is the beast. I mean,
yeah, precisely.
Nero, maybe he's the whore of Babylon. But it is all very time specific, and John on Patmos there was not the most mentally healthy guy.
Wasn't he like on shrooms all the time, Bob?
Sure, writes like it.
Yeah.
But you know, I have real problems with people who follow John Hagee and Joyce Meyer and these people, and who's the guy that has all the airplanes and all done in Texas?
Is that Creflo Dollar?
No, that's Kenneth Copeland.
No, not Kenneth Copeland. Oh. That's it, yeah. And, you know, these people are really, I mean, they are making a mockery out of Christianity. They really are. This prosperity gospel, I've never found it anywhere in any religious writings or the Bible or anywhere. And, you know, I know there's a financial advisor, Dave Ramsey, here that says, well, if you show God that you know what to do with money, he'll give you more of it. You know, I'm not believing some of the stuff I'm hearing today. It's ludicrous. And I don't know. It's, I don't know. I guess, you know. And then we got the deal where they're trying to do away with the rest of Obamacare, where insurance companies can charge older people more for their premiums and bring back the pre-existing conditions stipulation. So, you know, it's like me. I'm jobless right now. I'm 63 hunting for a job, and it's going to be hard for me to find a job.
Did you get the interview?
Yeah, I interviewed with a lady this morning. She's sending me an application, but that job pays about half of what I was making before. I can live on it because I've got my pension coming in. But, you know, if I can live on it until I turn 66, then pretty much I'll be in pretty good shape. Because then I can get a job at Walmart or something like that. And, you know.
God damn it, Charlie. You shouldn't have to do that. You're in your golden years. You should be enjoying life. Fuck Walmart, man.
Well, you know, that's just the way it is.
Yeah, you do what you got to do. And as far as pre-existing conditions, just being a woman is now could be considered a pre-existing condition.
That's true.
And we're going backwards.
Well, we're going where it's like they used to say on Star Trek, we're going where no man has gone before. They claim we're putting it back like it was. No, we're putting it back worse than what it was.
Oh, by the way, Brother Deacon Asa is familiar with Dave Ramsey too, Charlie. Or was it you, Steve, that mentioned it? The same Dave Ramsey makes an 8-figure income talking that bullshit, says Asa. You can't blame him for that. There's good, yeah. Look, well, there's good money in hustling the rubes.
Yeah, but it doesn't make it right.
No, it just makes it. What's the Bush era phrase? Uniquely American.
Well, I tell you what. I was born in '54, and I can remember growing up where wealthy people used to have a little bit of morals about them, and they used to try to do what was best for the country and for other people. And now that's just gone by the wayside. I mean, it's like, gimme, 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 and to heck with everybody else.
Oh, that actually reminds me of a song.
You're right. Your Ted Turners are dead. What do those millionaires call it? Want paid more taxes? I forget. It's a group of them.
Oh, the patriotic billionaires?
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, God love them, but they don't have a lobby. No, what you just said, Charlie, reminds me of there's a Rodney Crowell song from a 2005 album called The Outsider. Check out a few seconds of this.
Give to me my time and money. Give to me my milk and honey. Give to me my self-respect. Golden chains around my neck. Give to me my supermodel. Corporate jet and champagne bottle. Get me out there on the town. Let me spread my wealth around. I could learn to love this life I lead. But just don't take away the things I need. I feel rosy in a pink. So just don't make me stop and think. All those dark thoughts in my head seem like better left unsaid. Give it to me. Give it to me.
That's exactly what Charlie was talking about. That's the obscenity prayer. What a great title. That's the Obscenity Prayer. And give it to me.
It's awesome how art can imitate life and vice versa. It's just like that John Prine tune you spun last night, Bob.
We got somebody back feeding.
Yeah, we got some feedback going on.
Yeah, I think that's me. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, I hear you fine.
Oh, okay, great. I'm new to this, guys, so please bear with me.
That's okay. Sometimes it takes a minute.
Yeah, here, let me try to get rid of that.
That fixed it.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Hey, Rick.
Yeah.
How are you going to vote in November to split the state?
I'm going to vote against it, man.
Good.
Who's behind it? Some Republican billionaire or something wants to split California into three?
Yeah.
Perfect timing. So Marty wanted to hear about this. He said, how do the other California members of the Horn Family Community Congregation feel about that proposal?
Well, yeah, I'm against it. I mean, I think anything like that, you know, what, three quarters of the states and two thirds majority in the Congress? I mean, come on, give me a break, you know?
You'd get that. You would get that.
Well,
the initiative starts out with divides California into three states subject to approval of by Congress.
Yeah. I don't see that ever, even if the voters are stupid
Texas
enough.
Texas would vote for that in a minute. So would
Texas
Florida.
Would.
So would Florida.
Yeah.
So would Louisiana, Arkansas, Georgia, Mississippi, Alabama, South Carolina, North Carolina, Tennessee, Kentucky, Ohio, Missouri, Kansas. If it would happen to win, it would go on and happen.
They'd carve up California like the turkey buzzard on Thanksgiving.
Well, I guess the question is, what are the or Republican, or, you know, if two out of the three new states is going to be Democratic, then I say go for it. But
well,
that's
four new senators, and yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then there would be an effort to make sure we gerrymandered California to keep there from being any, you know.
Yeah. I mean,
the folks in charge are more than happy that Dakota Stan gets four senators and California gets two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just seems that doesn't seem to be something that's going to be approved by the voters. I don't see that happening. I'm highly skeptical of any major initiative like that. Like, what's the point here? What's, you know, that's kind of like a problem in search of a solution, right? So to speak.
Yeah.
Or a solution in search of a problem, I guess, is the expression, maybe. You know?
Well, they got 600,000 people to sign the initiative.
Well, but yeah.
You know how that goes. People stand in front of the grocery stores, they can get people to sign anything.
So what is the... So tell me about the people or persons who are behind this initiative. Is it like... what kind of industry are they involved in? You know, how's it going to benefit them? That kind of thing, you know?
All I know is it's a conservative billionaire that's behind the damn thing.
Okay, well.
And then, you know, they.
Let me guess. He's got some rubles behind the effort, right?
There would be like a Southern California, Northern California, and there'd be Coastal California.
Yeah.
And Coastal California would be north of L.A., you know, Santa Barbara, all that area.
Oh, it'd be north of L.A.? Southern California would be L.A. and San Diego and so forth in those areas?
Yeah, I mean, it'd run all the way through the Central Valley, too. Southern California would.
Yeah.
The map I saw, Northern California would just be lopped off just south of the Bay Area.
Okay, yeah, well... So it's possible that would increase Democratic participation, like Democratic Party, representation, but you know, but anyway, even if it does give California four new senators, if two of them are Republican or and two are Democrat, we're no better off than we are now, right? Because right now it's like we have two Democratic senators, so it'll now be, you know, it'll be 4-2.
Well, and you know, I realize I'm just a hillbilly and I don't have any I don't have a dog in this hunt. But I will direct you to the Federalist Papers and the discussions that were had as to whether or not representative democracy could actually work on the scale of a huge state. And there was a general consensus that it could not.
Mm.
And so the actual there's also an argument that no, three won't really accomplish anything. What you need is maybe six. In other words, that no state in this union should be any bigger than Vermont and New Hampshire. You know, or the New or generally speaking, the New England states, where they do and long have actually practiced things that resemble democracy. You'll notice that the states that were admitted to the union earliest, for instance, Tennessee, it's long and it's narrow, but it was created that way for a purpose. But most of the population was in East Tennessee, and so early on, you had some democracy taking place. And then when they carved the Mississippi territories into Mississippi and Alabama, they did something similar. Kentucky gets carved along waterways in the north and then just a boundary line in the south. And it begins to get out of hand with Michigan, Ohio, and then the horse is completely out of the barn with Missouri, Wisconsin, Minnesota. But it's also because of the number of people who were living there at the time. And at no point in time did anybody in the young United States contemplate a nation of this size. You know, Thomas Jefferson himself, in between times when he was going into Sally's room to rape her some more, Thomas Jefferson himself said that the size of the North America between from Atlantic to Pacific was enough to provide for the United States, these are his words, unto the thousandth generation.
Well, hey, Bob. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, we got you. You got it sorted.
Okay. Well, if you look at really early Indiana, the Indiana Territory, right? It's massive.
Oh, yes, it is.
Well, the Louisiana Purchase took up the entirety of the Midwest at one point, didn't it?
No.
Well, it was pretty large.
It went up the Mississippi River. The original capital of the Louisiana Purchase was St. Louis, and it angled off in sort of indeterminate form, but it didn't take up the Midwest that we know of as Ohio or Indiana or Illinois or Wisconsin.
Well, everything I'm talking west of the Mississippi
or Minnesota. No.
No, ours was the area of the Mississippi west of Minnesota was.
Was what?
Part of the Louisiana.
River was the boundary, is that correct?
It takes in a portion. The Indiana Territory gets created in 1809. Louisiana Purchase is made in 1803. And it takes in the states of Arkansas, Missouri, Iowa, the southern portion of Minnesota, the better part of North and South Dakota, Nebraska, Kansas, the eastern half of Colorado, I'd say 80% of Wyoming and all of Montana, or most all of Montana.
Okay.
The Indiana Territory, 1809, is basically just the size of Indiana. But the Illinois Territory, also created in 1809, goes up and encompasses the northeastern corner of Minnesota and all of Wisconsin, and what was, you know, what wasn't the Michigan Territory, which was created in 1805.
Yeah, I'm looking at a map of the Louisiana Purchase right now. It goes from New Orleans
too,
all the way up to Alberta. So, I mean, it's huge.
Arguably the Gadsden, the Gadsden Cession. Is either equal to or maybe slightly larger than the Louisiana Purchase. But, you know, that's California, Nevada, Utah, the western half of Colorado, almost all of New Mexico, almost all of Texas, and all of Arizona.
Bob, I've got a quick question here.
Yeah.
Let me turn the speaker off here. I can talk with the speaker on. I guess it's not going to feed back. I've got a friend, and she has some, I can't remember what the name of the disease is caused, but I'm sorry?
You fell apart there. I mean, you said, I don't know what the disease is called, and everything after that disappeared.
Okay, I turned the speaker off. Is this any better?
Well, you're fine, yeah.
Yeah, she's got a disease that causes her, I've never heard of it before, it causes her brain to shrink. I used to know her whenever I worked on the site at the IRS in Memphis when we had a contract with her mainframe down there. And her mother is wanting her to move out for some reason. And they live in a mobile home. They're having a hard time. They're not wealthy. And she draws about $1,400 a month disability. Would she qualify for Section 8, or how do you go about getting on Section 8?
You have to apply through HUD, through your local HUD office. Probably the best place to start would be your local welfare office, and they'll tell you where to go.
Would that be Social Security?
No, that would be go to your local welfare office, your state welfare office in the county.
Oh, okay. So welfare and Social Security are not run by the same agency?
No, Social Security is federal. The state runs. Uh-huh. The states administer the welfare programs.
Okay.
Yeah, don't go to Social Security. That place, the one in Redding, the Social Security office in Redding, is like a video of the people of Walmart. I swear.
Yeah.
I had to go there with my stepson last week or a week ago, whenever we went. And it's crazy.
Hey, Sparky, I have a question for you. How far are you from Grass Valley?
2 hours or so.
Okay, I was there for the Strawberry Festival over Memorial Day weekend. You know about that?
No, I didn't know they had a Strawberry Festival in Grass Valley.
Yeah,
all my cousins live over in Grass Valley, Nevada City area.
Ah, oh, neat. Yeah.
I know it, the area well. I've worked over there. I built a school over there just near in Penn Valley, if you know where that is.
Yeah, yeah. And Taj Mahal played. He was incredible.
Mm-hmm. I know the North State fairly well. I stay the hell out of Sacramento and San Francisco. And I won't go to Chico anymore, as I told Bob. That's where Bob Mulholland is from. It's Chico.
Yeah, I looked him up on Twitter. He is at Chico_Bob.
Yeah. So That place, the traffic is horrible there. It's worse, 10 times worse than Reading.
Well, Bob, I got to get out of here, brother.
Well, Steve, for very, very good reasons, my friend, and I hope you and Karen have a lovely evening if you decide to head out evening or tomorrow if you do it then.
Before I depart, I wanted to say I really liked the John Prine you played yesterday. And it's just, it floors me how that man can just get inside of your head.
Oh, like I said, that song breaks me up every time I hear it.
Oh,
I don't play it very often. It just ruins me.
There's a song called Rocky Mountain Time, and there's a line in there with my mom being in an assisted living center with dementia that tears me up. I don't know if you've ever heard it, but the line is, Christ, I'm so mixed up and lonely, can't even make friends with my brain. I don't know if it's directed to me or not. And it probably isn't.
Well,
you know?
it resonates.
Yeah.
And that's his genius. And it's the same thing with the line of reasoning in Hello in there. You know, old trees just grow stronger. Old rivers grow broader every day. Old people just get lonely waiting for someone to say hello in there. Hello.
And I won't quit my day job. It's just I thought it would sound better.
Hey, better
musically, you know.
You got me by about a million miles, brother.
you can sing, my friend. You can sing. But do you know that he wrote the liner notes for Iris DeMent's Infamous Angel?
I didn't, but I know they're friends.
Yep. And he said every time he listens to her, she makes him cry. But he blamed it on frying pork chops splattering in his eyes.
Well,
you know?
I mean, you know they've got there's a duet out there called In Spite of Ourselves that's just as cute as can be. John Prine and Iris.
No. I'll have to track that down. You know, I got third row seats to her in a month or
well,
two.
Well, hang on. I'll give you a taste just before you head out the door.
All right. Oh, man. My anniversary present. Cool.
It's cute as hell.
She don't like her eggs all runny. She thinks crossing her legs is funny. She looks down her nose at money. She gets it on like the Easter Bunny. She's my baby, I'm her honey. I'm never gonna let her go.
He ain't got laid in a month of Sundays. Caught him once and he was sniffing my undies. He ain't too sharp, but he gets things done. Drinks his beer like it's oxygen. But he's my baby, and I'm his honey. Never gonna let him go.
In spite of ourselves, we'll end up sitting on a rainbow. Against all odds, honey, we're the big door prize. We're gonna spike our noses right off of our faces. There won't be nothing but big old hearts dancing in our eyes.
Damn, that's almost an anniversary song, isn't it?
Jesus, Bob. I didn't know that. Thank you so much, my friend. Is that a CD or just a song that they cut?
He did, back in 1999, he did an entire album of duets. Iris DeMent, yeah. Connie Smith, Lucinda Williams, Trisha Yearwood, Melba Montgomery. Amy Lou Harris, Dolores.
Do you know
King.
The name? What's the name of it? I'm
the name of the
album.
The name of the album is "In Spite of Ourselves."
Awesome. Yes. And yeah, it would be.
I actually saw he headlined with Amy Lou Harris at Strawberry Festival.
He's on tour now. He may be in your area. I just missed him. So, if you want to go see one of the best songwriters ever out there, check him out, man.
He's incredible.
He is. Hey, I love you guys. I do, and I'll be back soon.
All right, you
happy
have a wonderful weekend,
Steve.
And happy anniversary again.
Congratulations.
All right. Thanks, guys and gals. Bye now.
Bye.
Well, darn, that's just sweet.
Yeah, that's a great song. I'm heading out for a concert here in about 20 minutes. I'm going to go see Chicago and REO Speedwagon at the LA Forum. So,
For once, I disagree with you, Rick.
Oh yeah, as far as what?
I mean, that's just I can't imagine that being any fun.
Oh, seriously? Yeah, are you serious?
Oh yeah. I mean, I never cared for REO Speedwagon, and it's just the ultimate in corporate rock, corporate 70s and 80s rock.
Well, okay, maybe so, but
they'll put on a good show and everything, but.
Puts on a good show.
Once you get past before. Riding the Storm Out, I'm pretty much done with REO Speedwagon, and once you're done with the first couple of three Chicago albums, I'm done with them too.
Well, okay.
I saw Chicago in like 1975.
Yeah, that was the Chicago to see.
That's true.
The only thing that could make that concert worse for me, Rick, would be if Michael McDonald made a guest appearance.
Or how about Ted Nugent decided to, like, you know, suck on his weapon or something like that, huh?
Well, there's always a chance of a misfire, and that would make it worth attending.
That would, actually. You're right. Well, yeah, anyway.
This is Irwin. Back in the 80s, I was working in Moscow, Idaho, and REO Speedwagon had a concert in Pullman, which is Washington State, and I used to hang out at a bar there. And the guitar player from REO Speedwagon was playing with the house band one night, just drunk on his ass, playing away. It was really interesting. But he was pretty good guitarist, but kind of like Bob, I just liked a few of their songs, not all of them. But thank you.
Hey, Irwin, welcome back for your second week in a row. Glad to have you.
Well, thanks, Bob. Yeah, I've been thinking this week about what I want to talk about tonight. One thing, yesterday my sister, who lives here in the same city as I do, she's liberal like I am, and her son is in his 40s, and he just graduated in law school at Temple in Philadelphia, I believe. And they just had a little girl yesterday, and everything was going well until I found out it was Trump's birthday. So I haven't discussed it with my sister yet. what a bad day to be born.
Yeah, but see, there's the nice thing. There's not going to be too many more days, too many more years where it's Trump's birthday, and after that, the brand new baby's in the clear.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And I just had one other thing. I'm on Facebook, and I'm kind of on Facebook wars with some conservatives from my hometown. I don't really say much about Trump. I just try to point out some things. Like this week, I really got on under their skin. I found a BBC article from 2015 where it said that there was 104 dictatorships or partial dictatorships in the world, and I posted that and said and in the article it said that a dictatorship can be better than a bad democracy, and I wrote that I didn't believe that, and I would never want to go have a dictatorship, and I'd rather live in somewhere like Norway or Sweden or Denmark or something. And all of a sudden they attacked me, all of them, and they said, "What's so great about those countries?" And I listed universal health care, gender equality, a number of other things, and I made the mistake of saying free college, and they really hit me on that one. They said nothing's free, so
yeah.
So
they're basically bad Americans, Irwin. They have no idea what America is supposed to be about, based on founding documents. You know, they're just bad Americans. That's the only thing I would say to them.
Yeah, I just give up with them. I mean, they
yeah. Just... Well, they're fascists, is what they are.
Facebook will take years off of all of our lives. Hell, Bob was pulling me off a ledge earlier today on Facebook.
I don't have time for Facebook. I don't have time for Facebook, you know?
Hey, speaking of that, Sparky, I have a question for you. I don't know what this acronym stands for, but the Republicans in my blog constantly harp on Hillary's emails and their and SAP. What does SAP stand for? Does anyone know? Special access emails? Is that right?
Maybe special access protocol or something
yeah,
like that?
Yeah, I think you might
know.
That's it, Rick.
There's a company called SAP in the Bay Area.
Yeah, I actually work for, well, with SAP, the software. But you cannot get them off that. They will not let that go. No way. No how.
Well, they're so long gone. I'm looking at a story right now. It's related to Hoover Dam, you know, Vegas. And we haven't talked about it. But, yeah, today, I presume this person to be a maggot, took his Freedom Protectors and barricaded himself and his Freedom Protectors in an armored truck parked crosswise on the Hoover Dam and started pasting notes or taping notes or whatever to the window glass. One of the notes said, "Mr. President, release the reports." Because now there's a conspiracy, because of course, because America, now there's a conspiracy theory that says that the real Inspector General report was not released yesterday, that's the fake Inspector General report, I guess, that the Illuminati created to make it look like Hillary wasn't really the demonic, diabolical, evil virago from hell that she really is. And only Donald can save us by releasing the real report.
Wow.
Oh, well.
I didn't think you could drive on Hoover Dam anymore. They built that big old bridge down there so you didn't have to go over it.
It was tweeted 3:55 p.m. today by 8 News Now.
Because you can't drive on Shasta Dam anymore. They got
Sparky, you forget. Where there's a will, there's a maggot, you know? So they found some way to do it.
Well, I don't know what SAP means in your world, but as far as my world, the only SAP I know is the button you press
soon
on
as
the...
possible?
Well, it's the button I press on the remote when I'm watching soccer so I can hear this.
That's a good one.
Man, that guy can hold that.
You
for
gotta
a long
have
time.
Serious pipes. And there were 6 goals scored in that game. You had to do that.
Just from the World Cup.
Yep.
Oh, by the way, James tells us that Hillary SAP is about her private server.
Yeah, that's what they're all ape shit about. It's ridiculous. They will not let it go, ever.
Well, no. What incentive do they have? It confirms all of their biases. It makes everything fall into place.
I mean, they spent how many years demonizing her? 30 years or whatever.
25 so not, at least. Yeah, maybe 30.
They're not just going to give that up easily. Come on. You know?
Yeah, they need their Goldstein. They need their human.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
What about Manafort going to jail today?
It's beautiful.
Yeah, that's great. Beautiful. About time, man.
Yeah, but at the same time, because I'm the little ray of fucking sunshine around here. At the same time, what a display of white privilege. A person of color similarly charged would have been rotting in jail for the last 11 months, or, you know, 9, 10 months, however long it's been since he was
charged. Since October.
Yeah. So, I mean, it sure took a while.
But it's a money bail system. He put up $10 million. How can a black man put up $10 million? That's another thing that needs to be changed.
Well, the entire bail system in this country is criminally corrupt.
It's proportional to the amount of melanin you have in your skin.
But he had to be caught egregiously, flagrantly violating the terms of his bail. So, Rick, here's a question for you, assuming you're still there, buddy.
Yeah, I am.
Since he violated the terms of his bail, is his bail forfeit?
Yes, that's why he's back into custody. Oh, the amount he's put up, has it been forfeited? Yeah, there's a pretty good chance it has been, I think, because that's the condition. You have to basically comply with the conditions of pretrial release. If you fail to comply, then I think you lose the, you know, whatever you put down. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. So he's lost, a million.
U.S. District Judge Amy Berman Jackson apparently was not taking any shit.
No, she wasn't.
No, not at all.
As it was described, after the ruling, one of Manafort's lawyers jumped to his feet and asked to delay the imprisonment while they appealed, and Jackson said, nope.
I think she said, you have to go now. I think that's what I heard.
Yeah, not my fault if you didn't bring a toothbrush, pal.
Every defendant knows you got to do is bring a toothbrush if there's any chance you're going to be, you know, locked up, you know? Mm-hmm. His attorney should have told him that.
Well, I thought they stripped you from everything.
Well, you can bring a toothbrush. Yeah, they take away, like, your tie, your belt, you know, anything you could, like, commit suicide with, that sort of thing. But, you know, there are certain things that they, you know.
Now, he won't go through that whole intake process. And he won't go into Gen Pop, will he?
I doubt it.
He'll go into pretrial detention.
Some other white collar criminals who are awaiting trial, although they usually don't go to. They usually aren't. Usually they get bail. So he might have his own wing, like, you know, like other celebrities get, you know.
One of the celebrity lawyers on MSNBC worked on Watergate, so he probably. Unless he turns, he'll probably never see the outside of a cell again.
Yeah, well, he's counting on a pardon, I think, you know? I mean, Trump has made it very clear that, you know.
Yeah, but Trump's trying to disown the dude.
Oh, well, that was beautiful. When at the White House today, he said, Paul Manafort worked for me for a very short period of time.
Yeah.
I hardly knew the go. And then he got on Twitter and said, wow, what a tough sentence for Paul Manafort, who's represented Ronald Reagan, Bob Dole, and many other top political people in campaigns. Didn't know Manafort was the head of the mob. God damn, he's so unutterably stupid.
Yeah.
He wasn't given a sentence. He wasn't convicted, Donnie dipshit. He violated his goddamn bail.
Well, yeah,
but the thing is, they're all brass. They immediately went and talked to Rudy Giuliani. When the whole thing is over, things might get cleaned up with some presidential pardons. You put a guy in jail if he's trying to kill witnesses, not just talking to witnesses.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Okay, Vinny.
Is that how he ran the U.S. Attorney's Office?
Maybe so.
he was pretty no mercy back then.
His office took down John Gotti, I think, finally. it took like a few tries because the guy got, he was called Teflon Don for so long because he would be charged and, you know, they would somehow, you know, tamper with the jurors and couldn't, you know, get 12 jurors to convict him. And eventually he somehow managed to get a conviction, you know, against Gotti. Good
yeah.
old Teflon Don.
He served in Marion, Illinois. Yeah. Hey, I just wanted to throw one thing out there real quick. So last weekend I got some pictures along the Willamette River in Portland of three ships. One of them was a Canadian ship called the Regina. And then two other, one was a minesweeper and one of them was a destroyer, U.S. And so I took a picture of the Regina and I said, Canada has attacked Portland and they tried to burn down Powell's books.
Wait a minute. I got it. Yeah, I got it. Oh, by the way, I got a cowbell. I got a cowbell for Darlene in Connecticut, too. There's Darlene's cowbell. Come on, Bob. Stop telling Billable Rick how to like his REO Speedwagon.
I'll have some hot sauce on mine, I think, tonight, Bob.
I think you should. I really do.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, speaking of concerts, you know who's playing? Roger Hodgson from Supertramp and Al Stewart are teaming up on a set of concerts this summer.
Oh, wow.
The only problem is it's on a Wednesday night in Orange County, which is like an hour, which is normally like an hour drive away, but it'd probably be 2 hours in the middle of the week. So it's kind of tough, though, the tough night. But maybe I'll do it anyway, you know?
Well, it sounds like a hell of an evening. Working together or just separate sets?
Together. Oh, separate sets, I think. I mean, they may collaborate on a couple of songs. You never know. You know how it works with the music biz. You know, they probably will do a couple together, you know? But, yeah, I've always wanted to see Roger Hodgson. He's really good.
Oh, at the height of their powers, I love Supertramp.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, hey, Larry's made it into the room. Hey, Larry. Or maybe not. I don't know.
Hold on. Yes, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. How are you?
Well, yeah, been better, but here, you know.
Yeah.
Winning.
Yeah, well, I'm glad I was able to come in for a little while. And the whole turn of current events is just absolutely mind-boggling what... Apparently, Mercedes is letting me know what's happening with what's his ass. And it's just, anyway, so that's, and other than that, there's not much else going on. And I'm glad you're going to see Supertramp or Roger Hodgson.
I might. I'll have to see Larry. I'm pondering it. The Wednesday night's what's giving me pause, you know. But I guess I could take the whole day off of work and just go from home and leave a little early to beat the rush hour, you know.
Yeah.
What time
Bob,
is it?
I was.
Yeah, go ahead, Larry.
Bob, I was reading a little bit about the mine disaster in Gully East up in the 1930s.
That wasn't a mine disaster, Larry. That was. That was the construction of a giant tunnel through Gauley Mountain to provide hydroelectric power for Union Carbide.
That's what I remember reading about.
Yeah, it's called the Hawk's Nest Tunnel Disaster. It was the worst industrial disaster in the world until Union Carbide gave us Bhopal.
Well...
Over on US 19, north of here, there's a historical marker by the side of the road and a little turnoff, a road that doesn't go anywhere. But there's a historical marker for the nearby unmarked mass grave of African American workers who were just dumped in a pit when they died digging that tunnel because it was mostly African American workers. And Gauley Bridge at the foot of Gauley Mountain, about 8 miles from where I am now, it was known as the Town of the Living Dead. And that's where the world first learned about silicosis and occupational pneumoconiosis, because the workers would breathe so much silica dust that when it combined in the wet environment of the lungs,
hey guys,
it would turn to concrete, Larry.
Hey guys, and so we have to shut all the power down. So y'all have a great weekend, okay?
Rick, I wanted to ask.
You have a great weekend too, Rick.
10 years.
Well, hey, we'll take care. It's kind of up and down. I'm sort of win one and lose one. That's the way it's been lately. But I'll tell you more next Friday, okay, Chris?
You got it, Rick.
Hey, take care.
All right, have a wonderful weekend, Rick.
Thanks. Take care. Bye.
Well, before anybody else takes off, I got to tell you about the results of my first ever political campaign. I recently ran for the state house in Minnesota in one of our house districts. And, you know, fortunately, we have somebody far more qualified to run for the seat than I do. Yeah, I basically got the pants beat off of me by a young woman from a nearby town who is one of the most talented young women I could have ever met. She just graduated from the University of Minnesota, and she gave the graduation speech. She gave the valedictorian speech at the University of Minnesota.
Wow.
That's kind of what I was up against. She currently works for Keith Ellison. She's served under Al Franken. She also worked for Tina Smith, the lady who replaced Al Franken, as an intern supervisor. She's worked for Senator Durbin in D.C. She's worked for Governor Dayton here in St. Paul. She's also doing community organizing work. She was managing three different campaigns while she's running this. I don't know how in the world she does it. She reminds me of a young Obama.
That's a hell of a resume. She must have started when she was 10.
Oh my goodness!
Well, you know, Larell,
I got four votes in the nominating contest, and I'm surprised I got more than myself. That's how it went. I think it was like 32-4 or something like that.
Yeah, I'll tell you, but it makes buying them the pints of Four Roses a lot cheaper.
Exactly. Hey, Larell, but you know what? It'll be a chance to. You know, our district has never been represented by an African American, never been represented by a woman, and this would be a great milestone to achieve for us. And trust me, my work ain't done. I'm gonna be busting my tail, knocking on doors for her too. So,
She sounds like a mentor.
And she's 23. She's 23.
23, unbelievable.
Wow.
And when she was born, her father was 72. He's passed on since, but I talked to her mom after the nomination process, and I said, what in the world kept him going at that age? And she said, me. this young lady had quite a good upbringing, you know.
Well, good for you for jumping out there and participating in the process, Larell.
Good. Even if I got my pants beat off, it was for a good cause.
Well, you got four votes to turn around for her. So
yeah, exactly, exactly.
Hey, yeah, Bob, I do think there's a lot of impressive people that are jumping into the fray now. I really do. I really hope so. I don't know if I subscribe to the blue wave theory, but I'll tell you what, I sense that people are pissed, and they're ready to jump in.
Oh, I do too. The question is maintaining unity in the individual districts where the races are. The House looks doable. The Senate is a steeper climb.
Do you think? Well, let me ask you this: well, if you were to put a percentage right now, Marsha Blackburn, can we get her out of there? I mean, she's as wacky, if not more wacky than the crazy Minnesota lady. What was her name?
Michelle Bachmann.
Yeah, yeah. Just as crazy, if not worse.
Absolutely.
Well, she's running for Senate.
I was at my casino job the other day. I was dealing to a couple of guys that were real good friends with Steve King, and boy, they were talking him up, and I was biting my tongue. Oh, God, I wish I didn't live on tips sometimes.
Well, I mean, they're Republicans, so they probably don't tip worth a fuck anyway.
Not really.
As for Marsha, Marsha, my goodness. You know, you've got to ask the question. Can her opponent, who is it, Bredesen, former governor, can he overcome the maggots? Because see, and that's in a state like Tennessee, that's what you face if you're the opposition. She comes out of the gate with 35% of the vote. She's got to get 16 more percent. He's got to get 51%.
Yeah, but you know what, Bob? There's towns like Chattanooga and I think even Nashville that, and even maybe Memphis, that if everybody comes out to vote there, maybe it's enough to overcome it.
Oh, it may be. I'm not saying it's impossible. But, I mean, the reality is that she comes out of the gate with 35% of the vote.
There's no question.
And as Charlie, if he was still here, could tell us, I'm convinced this is a good barometer. Don't tune into the news talk stations in a place like Nashville or Knoxville. Tune into the sports talk stations.
Mm.
And you'll get a real good sense there because, they bring their politics to their sports too.
Yeah. You hear that a lot on AM radio here in Portland. Sports radio dominates the whole band. It's crazy. And yes, they're all right-wing crazies.
Yeah, and the sports talkers are almost all right-wing crazies. There's very few that aren't.
Yep. I'm a sports nut, but I'm far from that.
I think about, what's his name, Colin Cowherd? Out of ESPN, my God, he's just Limbaugh with a baseball in his mouth.
Ugh.
Well, the Vikings play-by-play announcer, he's horrifying politically. Paul Allen, oh God, he's got Hugo Boss uniform material if it ever materializes because oh mercy.
The only one I can think of who is really liberal is Bill Walton.
Oh, yes. No doubt about it.
He's always doing something. But,
well, and Dan Patrick.
And, of course, the other guy, Olbermann.
Yeah, but, I mean, they're not doing 552 sports talk. Olbermann's not.
Yeah, right.
Well, we got just a little bit of time left. I wanted to go back to the Manafort story because there's a great quote from the judge. They jumped up and said, or Manafort's lawyers jumped up and said, Judge Jackson, even if you find that he had improper contacts, and we deny that he did, you can still limit the problem without sending him to jail. You could give him a no contact order that says he can't even contact potential witnesses. And that's when the judge pounced. She said, "This isn't middle school. I can't take his cell phone."
That's awesome.
And that's one of those moments where yes, ma'am. And you just sit down and you know that you just hope that they don't hear about it, that the partners don't hear about it back at the office.
I'm reading a post from Sister Carol on Facebook. Manafort's in jail. Cohen is ready to sing. And the Fuhrer is asking Kelly if we have an extradition treaty with North Korea. God bless her.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Good.
So what's the, what are the implications for this government if these people get thrown in jail? I mean, how does it really affect the asshole in chief or the
Well, theoretically, maybe it makes him a little more willing to talk because, see, What he's looking at right now is the first day of the rest of his life. Because if he gets convicted, he's never getting out of jail. He's 69 years old.
He's gonna light up the spiral keys, right?
When he leaves prison, he'll leave through the back feet first. And he's been a very wealthy man, and he's not gonna want to be, you know, Bernie Madoff. And so it's gonna put real pressure on Julius Geezer, who is having a hissy, because the one thing he doesn't know. And you know, he knows what a crook he is. He knows what all the filthy things he's done are. And so it's going to start making him sweat. My personal hope is that it eventually gives him a stroke. And it's legal for me to hope that.
Yeah, I was going to ask that, Bob.
Well, I mean, if the Christians can pray imprecatory prayers for Barack Obama to drop fucking dead for every day for 8 years, I think it's okay for me to say that I hope this creates sufficient pressure for him to have a fucking stroke.
I'm with you.
And then there's Pence. Good morning.
Oh, God.
Well, yeah, there is. And there's, but Mueller's got dirt on Pence, too. See, that's one of those things that makes November kind of important. Because theoretically, if the Democrats take over in January 2019 and somehow or another Trump and Pence get out of the way, why, hello, President Pelosi.
Hey, you know, Pence.
And it would be like the end of Mars Attacks all over the United States. The Slim Whitman music playing and little maggot heads just going pop, 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 pop. It'd be a beautiful day.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, I got a quick question, Bob. Has anyone seen the Showtime series out there that's a Trump spoof of the whole cabinet? I think Stephen Colbert put it together. Has anyone watched that?
I have not. I don't have Showtime.
Funny. Oh, it's funnier than fuck. It's so funny. It's really funny. The whole cabinet's there. Everybody. Jared. Nobody's spared. It's awesome.
I've watched it on YouTube.
Okay, Sparky. Yeah, it's hysterical.
Here's a little trivial moment. I cannot watch the Faye Dunaway confession scene from Chinatown anymore. Because all of a sudden my brain transposes Faye Dunaway to Ivanka Trump and John Huston to Donald Trump.
Oh, no.
God.
She's my sister. She's my daughter. She's my sister and my daughter.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's pretty. Wow. Yeah. By the way, a little correction coming in from Darlene in Connecticut. It was Robert Mueller when he was at the DOJ who oversaw the prosecution of John Gotti, not Giuliani.
Ah.
Oh, Bob, I wanted to ask, there used to be a woman that used to call in who used to teach business ethics at Kansas State University.
The amazingly coherent Diane from Kansastan.
How is she doing?
No, I haven't heard from her in a while.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes people just fade away.
Well, people find the horn for a reason. And when, you know, and then sometimes they move along. And that's, you know, that's fine. I mean, we've been here for...
Yeah, like, I got over 100 contacts I need to delete from Skype, I think.
Wow. That's a bunch. we got to get out of here. Thank you, Sparky, for moderating. Happy anniversary again, Steve, if you should happen to still be listening. Thank you to Larry and Chris and Irwin and Laurel.
Take care. I'm off to bed. The next soccer match starts at 5 in the morning.
Rest up. It'll be tiresome work. Thank you, Charlie, earlier. Thank you to Billable Rick. Been a really good conversation this evening. Sorry about the visual earlier. Sorry. And so we close out the week, we close out the program, and we close out the first half of the month of June down $275. I sincerely hope. No, not down 275, 215, down $215. And thanks very kindly to Gary and John and Steve for getting it down from 275. I surely and sincerely do hope that that gets cleared up before next week, because while I'm gone to D.C., it's just going to be worrisome, and that's not good. No program Monday, no program Tuesday. Very likely a program Wednesday, no program Thursday, no program Friday. Family obligations. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Steve and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa for HeadOn.live. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. I'm sure going to miss you guys next week. I'll be back as quick as I can, a week from Monday. Have a wonderful weekend and a great week. Later, y'all.